Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, folks. Today's guest is Chris Burrs. Chris Burrs is a scientist. He's a research engineer and a scientist whose primary mission is to help people live longer, healthier, pain-free lives. Cool, you say. Why should I really care that much? Because Chris Burrs is in the business now of marketing a compound that I think you might find very interesting. Some of you may have heard about it before, but I'll give you a hint. Let's see how many of you know what I'm talking about. It's a compound that when scientists originally tested it for toxicity, because it was an industrial compound that they were about to put out into the environment, but when they tested it for toxicity on their Wistar lab rats, which are lab rats that are bred to develop tumors as they age, they discovered that not only did the rats not develop tumors, but the longest living one of them lived 90% longer than he was supposed to. And that was pretty shocking to our researcher friends. And that got a lot of people's attention. So the compound that we're talking about is Carbon 60. Some of you may have heard of it before. Some of you may have tried it. It's got some incredible applications. It's got great applications for animals. So they have a pet product as well as a human product. And we're going to talk about why this product is so innovative, how it can help. We're going to talk about some of the testimonials that the company gets from consumers all the time, both for their animals and for themselves. And we're going to talk about what you can and cannot expect from Carbon 60. And also, Chris very kindly offered to talk to us a little bit about when you're buying Carbon 60 from other companies, how can you tell if what you're getting is actually what they say you're getting. And there are some really interesting ways to tell. Carbon 60 can be mixed in different oils. It can be mixed into extra virgin olive oil. It can be mixed into coconut oil. And I think there's one other one, maybe sunflower oil. Anyway, we talk about it in the episode. I think you'll find it quite interesting. I think that's all I'm going to say right now. I don't want to steal the thunder of the episode. There's lots of good stuff in here. Chris is a great guest. He's very dynamic, so I think you're going to enjoy listening to him. If you decide that you want to give this stuff a try, you can go to myvitalc.com and go to myvitalc.com/BSPNN. So it's a lot of letters. So it's B as in biohacking, S as in superhuman, P as in performance, and N my initials. And that will get you $15 off your first purchase, or you can use promo code BSPNN. I'm not sure if you might have to use both, or if you go to the page, you don't have to use a promo code, but either way, you have them both. And the website, of course, is just myvitalc.com. So thank you so much for being here today. I appreciate you guys. I hope that you enjoy this episode. And please make sure that if you have any comments or any feedback on the episode or this one or any other, make sure that you reach out to me at natnidham.com. And if you get value from the episode, make sure to leave us a review and also to share it with your friends and your networks, because the more people we can reach, of course, the more we can get amazing guests for you guys. If you're looking to connect with me, you can find me on Facebook in the Optimizing Superhuman Performance group. And if it doesn't come up under that, try Biohacking Superhuman Performance. If you can't find it still, Facebook has been making us a little bit hard to find these days. Just reach out to me through my website and I'll help you out. You can also find me on MeWe, also Biohacking Superhuman Performance Group. You can find me on Instagram. That's just my name, Natalie Nidham, and also on Clubhouse. So thank you again for being here. I totally appreciate you guys and enjoy the episode. Welcome, Chris Burrs, to the podcast. It is so nice to meet you.
Natalie, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about jumping in and sharing some information. Apparently, you've been looking for a little while.
No. And, you know, it's funny because when I think it was Brooke who reached out to me and said, we have this great guest for your podcast, which she always says. And most of the time she does. I'm like, oh yeah. And she goes, yeah, no, it's CRISPRs and ESS 60. And I'm like, ESS 60. I've never heard of that. I've never even heard of that. And then I went looking into, I'm like, oh my God, this is carbon 60. This is the guy I've been looking for. So
I'm here.
Yeah, super stoked. So guys, people, listeners, we are going to be talking about carbon 60 today, but not just any carbon 60. We are actually talking about ESS 60. And their carbon 60. And Chris is going to explain to us what that's all about. But before he gets into that, he's going to tell us a little bit about yourself, Chris. Who, what do you do? How did you get here? What brings you to sitting in that chair in front of me today?
And maybe how is it that I'm a reluctant supplement guy?
Yeah, that's it. Well, that I can understand because the supplement industry is
good.
Crazy. It's a bit of wild, wild west these days.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're here in Houston. My lab and my office are here in Houston. This is actually where they discovered carbon 60 at Rice University here in Houston. I went to school studying mechanical engineering. My business partner, I met him in physics class. I always remember the professor's name in that class because his name was Dr. Weinstein. And I just feel like he was destined to be a physics professor. That's like, yeah. Like he was born and like, here is your physics professor, Mr. and Mrs. Weinstein, who were probably also physics professors.
Exactly.
We met in that class and my business partner was actually working at the Texas Center for Superconductivity, which is an organization that sits inside of the University of Houston campus. And he was working for a Dr. Paul Chu. Dr. Paul Chu is very famous in the superconductivity realm. In fact, we used to call the building that was the Texas Center for Superconductivity Chu's Castle because they built it really for him and because of his notoriety in superconductivity. It turns out that the molecule we'll be discussing today is superconducting at certain temperatures. And so my business partner was working for Dr. Paul Chu, separating, isolating the individual components of fullerenes. And we'll get to that in a second. And one day Dr. Chu came in and said, hey, you guys are young scientists. This material is selling for $6,000 a gram. It's always good for a pregnant pause there.
Wow.
Because $6,000 a gram is a lot of money. And my business partner is from an entrepreneurial background. It didn't take him long to like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. Let's do this. He actually had another business partner who was also working at the Texas Center for Superconductivity. They brought me on board because they wanted to help manufacturing the equipment. And just real quick, in order to manufacture fullerenes, you actually take two graphite rods and you vaporize them in an inert gas environment. So you have to have a reactor. Turns out that vaporizing graphite is one of the hardest materials in the world to vaporize. So you're dealing with local temperatures of the sun. So my mechanical engineering expertise came into play as we were designing and building this piece of equipment. It turned out that other business partner, still a good friend of ours, went other directions. He had more fun things to do in college. And then Robert and I kind of grew the original company and we're here. So really, we're carbon nanomaterial manufacturers.
Okay.
And what is a carbon nanomaterial? So let's dive into that real quick.
Us.
So in 1985, three professors at Rice University here in Houston discovered the third form of carbon. I'm going to hold this up. I know you've got a lot of listeners. So for those who can't see the molecule I'm holding up, imagine a soccer ball where the lines on the soccer ball represent the bonds between the carbon atoms. So you have a spherical molecule of 60 carbon atoms. That's what they discovered in 1985. They published it in Nature. It literally went viral. If you think about, oh, this video went viral on YouTube or whatever. And in 1991, actually the year we started the company, all 10 of the 10 most referenced research papers were related to fullerenes, were related really to this molecule.
Wow.
So when you talk about viral, it went viral. Not surprising, those professors. So again, discovery in 1985, by 1996, they won the Nobel Prize for that discovery. So a few short 11 years.
Okay, but at that time, the fullerenes were not a supplement.
No.
It was an industrial application was what was envisioned for it, right?
Yes. They're harder than a diamond. They'll actually turn into a diamond. This molecule, that soccer ball, has six-fold symmetry. So there's six planes of symmetry through which the molecule is actually symmetrical. You can take the molecule and fire it at stainless steel at 15,000 miles an hour. Most, you know, we were talking about peptides earlier. Most peptides will just shred apart. This will actually compress and bounce right back. It's big enough for any atom in the periodic chart to fit inside of it. And that's kind of cool for a couple of reasons. One, there's a new symbol in chemistry because of this molecule. So it makes sense. These guys won the Nobel Prize. The at symbol, which we're familiar from our email addresses, that at symbol means something trapped inside of it. So if you have lanthanum at C60, what you have is a lanthanum atom or two, lanthanum two, trapped inside of it. So it's not ionically bonded or covalently bonded to the exterior. It's just physically trapped inside of it. And so that at symbol is kind of new to chemistry.
So can it be used to deliver?
So interesting, right? Like this is amazing, right? Think about benzene, and you've got a good enough background. Like benzene is ubiquitous in our society, right? If you just look around you, if it's plastic, it's got a benzene ring in it. Yeah. Most medicines are associated with the benzene ring or have a benzene ring as a foundation. Detergents. We don't have modern society without the benzene ring. Well, this buckyball has a large number of benzene rings on the exterior of it. Right? It's like they format the actual sphere that is carbon 60. And so a lot of the chemistry that works on benzene works on this buckyball. It's also the reason they won the Nobel Prize is a lot of scientists said, well, this is just a 3D version of benzene. And if benzene is ubiquitous in our society, modern society now, then this is going to be ubiquitous at some point. Okay. And that's why they won the Nobel Prize. Okay. And you look at benzene is a known carcinogen and it's known to be toxic. And so they actually assumed that this buckyball, which we call, if you're going to consume it, ESS 60, would be toxic. They did a toxicity study in 2012. And in that toxicity study, they actually found that we'll get into some details of that study, but they actually found that it increased the life of the test subjects by 90%.
Yeah. No, I've read that study. It's pretty impressive. It's okay. Crazy. So how do we make the leap then from industrial, super crazy material that can be fired at a stainless steel wall at stupid speeds and bounce right back off again to something that anybody would think about ingesting? And, you know, and we know that in rodent models, it will extend their lifespan by like 90%, which is mind bending.
Yes.
And not that there are, and a good 90%. Like, so we've expended lifespan with health span. None of them have cancer. Like they lived well.
Yep. I always kind of joke that it wasn't noted in the documentation that those rats.
They had to kill the last one, right?
They had to kill the last one. Yeah. Yeah. Euthanize is a better
I'm
way.
Sorry.
It was never noted in that study that the rats were walking around with little walkers and dragging little, you know, rat oxygen tanks around. They lived healthy rat lives until they passed. And you're right. They were down to two rats and then one of the two died and they euthanized the last one because, I mean, they were in that study. So the short answer to your question is like, how do we leap from industrial? This will be, we'll do it for dramatic effect. How do we leap from industrial application to actually health supplement application? And the answer is a toxicity study.
Right. Right. So if it extends lifespan by 90%, somebody starts scratching their head going, well, wait a minute, what's it doing?
And literally that study came out in 2012. In 2013, we started getting phone calls, how much in a dose? And you've got a picture, like we're carbon nanomaterial scientists. We got our carbon nanomaterial hat on and we're like, dose, hold on a second. It's good in ink. It's good in tires. It's good in batteries. It's good in solar cells. We really aren't comfortable with you putting it in your body. We actually added not for human consumption to all of our labeling. So from 1991 until 2013, we didn't have to bother with not for human consumption labeling. In 2013, we added it to our products. Now, it's important to note that the reason we added that is because we're slow conservative scientists, right? The data was very clear. C60 is for industrial applications, and there's peer-reviewed published research that proves if you improperly process it, it's actually dangerous. And then ESS60 is C60 that's been processed for safer human consumption. And when you processed it properly, the literature was very clear that this material is actually safe. Not only is it safe, in that case, it extended the rats' lives by 90%. When you go back and look at that study, a typical Worcester rat lives 32 months long, and that's what the average was in this particular study for the water rats. Okay, in the study, they gave rats water, rats olive oil, and then rats olive oil with the ESS60 molecule.
Right. Yeah.
Typical Worcester rat lives 32 months, and they actually have a known amount of tumors in their body. So every day that rat lives, maybe better to say every week that rat lives, the tumor mass in their body increases, and this is well documented. Despite the fact that the MyVitalC rats lived 90% longer out to 62 months, none of them had any tumors, right?
And these are guys that are bred to grow tumors. Like little
yes.
tumor factories.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So a lot of people, they'll hear that, and I don't think this is you, but I know a lot of people are like, oh, no tumors. This is a cure for cancer. No. Like, no. No.
Let us repeat. Nuh-uh. Yeah.
No. There's a huge difference between managing and managing a cancer that has metastasized and actually being a cancer preventative. This study kind of has an indication that this is probably a good cancer preventative. We also know other cancer preventatives, like getting a good night's sleep on a regular basis, mm-hmm. eating healthy, getting exercise. So it puts it into that class. Now, I always like this is really interesting because this is a toxicity study, right? And the fact about a toxicity study is if your control group is all dead and your quote unquote toxic group is all alive, it's not toxic.
No.
So they actually could have ended their study at month 32 because that's when all of the control rats were had passed. But they continued to do for another 30 months, the animal husbandry necessary to keep these rats alive. That's 2.5 years, right? So you're 2.5, like if you assumed it was toxic, you're kind of hoping these rats are dead in less than a year, right? Yeah. And then you can publish your study and say, yes, when you give a rat C60, it dies. But that's not what happened. They got to, you know, the 32-month mark, all of the MyVitalC rats are alive. Then they get, you know, then they keep doing the animal husbandry for another 2.5 years. So I always like to give kudos to the researchers for actually doing that. Otherwise, we don't have this remarkable result.
Right. So actually having the curiosity and the wherewithal to keep it going, basically to keep showing up at the lab every morning going, I wonder if, you know.
I wonder if they're still alive.
They're still there.
Yeah.
Is a toxicity study different than the study they do where they just keep increasing the dose to see at what dose half of the subjects will die?
It is different. And in fact, it's typically more aggressive, right? When you do the very first toxicity study, you don't just like give a little bit and see if the rats feel ill. You give a lot and figure out if it's actually going to kill them. And really what this is saying is like, this is non-toxic. People ask me, well, what is the toxicity level? And in my mind, not tested or proven, in my mind, it's the same as the toxicity level of olive oil, which probably is combined with drowning,
yeah.
right? Like that's right. And we know that we can drink too much water, right? And we can actually, you know, have our cells explode. It's in that realm. At least that's what this study indicates. And that's what, you know, kind of the reports that we're getting from everyone is that, you know, we know that people are taking pretty large quantities of this material now. So you go back to 2013, not for human consumption, but we are mixing our ESS60 molecule in olive oil so that you can do, you know, your rat study. Right? Because it's actually back then in smaller batches, you can mix it for about 2 weeks and you can get olive oil dissolves ESS60 very slowly. So it takes about 2 weeks. It's not like pouring sugar into water and boom, you know, it's a solution. So you got to mix it. And back then it was 2 weeks. Hey, we'll do the 2 week mixing. We got a lab. We'll sell it to you and you can, you know, do a study on your rat, right? Let's reproduce this. Well, we were getting calls two or three times a week. And those calls were like, hey, my knee pain is gone. And we're kind of like, you mean the knee pain of your rat is gone, right? Like, because this is, it says on it, not for human consumption.
You know, you're talking to the biohacking N of one community.
And I actually affectionately call them wackos, because I am also one. Like, the, you know, if you want to wait until that study that comes out, that's a, you know, $1 million+ study, that I have some friends who are like, yeah, I'm not really comfortable taking it. And I'm like, okay, like, that's not scientifically unreasonable. No. It just doesn't fit with me looking at the data and saying, okay, here, I understand the risks and there are some, and I understand the benefits and there seem to be many. So like, it's a legitimate point. Like, I'm not comfortable taking this. Sure. But, you know, we're getting these calls a couple of times a week. And they're reporting pretty amazing testimonials. In kind of latter part of 2017, a guy with a big YouTube following starts talking about all the benefits he's getting from taking it on a daily basis. And really, our calls went from 2 a week to 10 a day.
No kidding.
First, nanomaterial scientist. Second, entrepreneur. Like, we're looking at this as it's obviously an entrepreneurial opportunity. And we had to, my business partner and I really like sat down, we got in a room and sat down and said, like, what are we going to do with this? Like, what's the right thing to do with this? And we asked ourselves two questions. The first one is the moral question. Am I comfortable selling it? Mm-hmm. I take it. My wife takes it. Everybody on our team takes it. I'm comfortable selling it. And the next, at least here in the United States, is the FDA and the FTC. Mm-hmm. You got to follow their guidelines. And we're doing that. And so really, it was 2018 that we started selling this on a regular basis, or on a more commercial basis, and pulled off the not for human consumption labeling. Because, again, we just looked at the literature. Not that much had changed, but the literature was still clear, like, especially with this toxicity study.
So I have a question for you. So I remember this number from the beginning of our conversation, $6,000 a gram.
Yep.
So explain to me how the math works, because is it that we need itty bitty little teeny tiny amounts so that $6,000 a gram becomes affordable, or has the price come down in all this time that you've figured out how to make it more efficiently?
It's a little bit of both, actually. Okay. So you look at the process of manufacturing fullerenes, or buckyball specifically, the carbon 60 molecule. Again, you vaporize that graphite in an inner environment, and you create a soot, and you collect that soot. That soot only has about, on a good day, 10% fullerenes in it. And fullerenes are C60, C70, C76. There's a whole gamut of molecules that have this spherical shape. So now you need to separate the C60 from the rest of the fullerenes, from the higher fullerenes. And so you go through a chromatography process to separate that. So first off, you separate that 10% from, we call it carbon crap because it's just in our way. And then that 10% is fullerenes. And then of that 10%, somewhere between 80 and 90% of that is C60. And so we separate that out. So it's a really long process to actually get the C60, but the price has come down significantly. And you're right. In the early days, we understood, like, what was, cause I have a passion for carbon nanomaterials. Like, that's, you know, that may sound weird, but I've been manufacturing them since 1991. We're the first company that still exists to deliver commercial quantities of carbon nanomaterials. And in the early days, we're like, okay, this is still very expensive, even as the price had come down or was coming down. How is this going to hit? We weren't even hoping mainstream. Like, how are we just going to hit some point where people are actually using it in some sort of product that's helping society in some way? And we understood really quickly that there were really two applications. One, just like you described, where a little tiny amount of C60 would have a significant impact. So the cost of what you're adding doesn't really impact the final product. And then the other was like defense situations, right? If you can help a plane be invisible, it doesn't matter how much it costs, right? If you can help whatever, an armament hit its target better, it doesn't matter what it's cost. So we were looking at kind of those two arenas. And when I say looking, we're just like hoping that somebody in one of those two arenas would actually come forward and we would finally have a product that was related to carbon nanomaterials. It turns out that you can't dissolve much ESS60 in olive oil. It's about 0.8 milligrams per milliliter.
Okay.
Which is not much, right? It's, you know, sugar's
and that's during it for 2 weeks.
And when you get larger containers, because of the fluid dynamics, it actually needs more time.
Yeah.
Right. So we mix it for 3 weeks in an inner environment, right? So we got a nitrogen buffer gas, because when you're mixing it, you're not like gently, no one's sitting there with a wooden spoon. It's like there's a big vortex. And if you had oxygen there, you would just be folding oxygen into your ESS 60 and into your olive oil. Not good things. So we have this nitrogen bath to protect it.
Yeah, it doesn't. So I read something about if C60 becomes photo excited, that's a really bad thing. It's going to make little oxygen, like singlet oxygen radicals. So photo excited, those exposure to light, right? And then so there's two issues. So you're protecting it from light.
Yep, because it's in a stainless steel vessel. Yep.
And you're protecting it from oxygen, because also, so both of them will cause basically damage to the fullerene that then becomes toxic.
Well, okay, so I don't know if you're referencing this, there's a fairly recent study that came out and it was just hypercritical about C60 in general. And as with almost every study, it begs more questions than it answers. That's just the nature of science. But one of the things that's kind of not accurate is they said they exposed the product, the olive oil product. And by the way, the images in that study show olive oil with C60 in it to be purple. It's actually not purple. Olive oil, if you take olive oil, which has usually a greenish tint, and usually when you dissolve C60, it does turn purple. But when you take purple and a greenish tint together, you just get like an amber mucky color.
Yeah.
In MCT, it's a beautiful purple because MCT is clear.
Nice.
So the photos in that study are actually, that's just wrong. Like that is not C60 in olive oil. But they said that they exposed it to like what they felt would be a typical exposure to light as you're consuming the product. But it's like 10 times the strength of the sun, and it's for like 2 hours a day. And I don't know how much is your olive oil exposed to light, you know, even exposed to, I mean, maybe on your counter, but it's not outside.
No.
Right. And olive oil is good for 3 years. One thing that was noted in that original toxicity study, 5+ years into the study, the olive oil with the ESS 60 molecule in it was still on the shelf and was not rancid yet.
Hmm. Okay.
Right. So if we know that it's an antioxidant and oxidation is what's causing olive oil to go rancid, it kind of makes sense that the presence of the ESS 60 molecule is going to cause it to have protective effects against oxidation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very conservative again. So typically when we bottle, we put 2 years from the day that we bottle it, even though we know olive oil on its own has 3 years and we probably have more because of the presence of ESS 60. Mm-hmm. But that study, like I said, it begged a lot more questions than it answered. Right. And it also isn't just the C60, because remember, the environment that you're making C60 is local temperatures of the sun, right? And it's experiencing the radiation as close as possible to local temperatures of the sun. So that same UV radiation, we've got a sight glass as we're manufacturing. One, you have to have a welder's goggle if you want to look in it, or if you want to burn your eyes, you can take it off. That's your choice.
Yeah.
And if you take it off and you just let it shine on your skin, you'll get a sunburn, right? Wow. It literally is giving off the UV radiation of the sun.
Crazy. Okay. So then when you buy your C60, and I'm getting ahead of us because there's so many other questions to answer, and I'm sure you're going to carry on, but just because it's top of mind right now.
Yeah.
So you were talking about when you're mixing the olive oil with the C60, you've got almost like a nitrogen plug that protects it from oxygen. So, but when I buy my carbon 60, my ESS 60 from you guys, which is carbon 60, that is an olive oil or an MCT oil. And you're going to have to explain to me why one or the other, because I know you need both, it's no longer going to have that nitrogen plug. So now it's going to get exposed to oxygen every time from the minute I open that bottle, it's going to be exposed to oxygen. So does that oxygen not going to then cause oxidative damage, or?
We are constantly testing, and we actually do have the HPLC, and I'll talk about kind of pedigree. If you want to go into the market and look for a C60 product, like, you just got to be careful. And I'll talk about that in a second. Yeah. But I mean, we typically sell, so this is one of our bottles. We typically sell a 30-day supply.
Yeah.
Right. So you're talking about a product that has a shelf life of 2 years that you're going to be consuming in 30 days.
Right.
So the short answer in that time frame, no. If you were to open it and leave it on your shelf, I would open it and leave it on my shelf. I'd be comfortable for a year and a half.
Right.
Like, I just wouldn't have any problem with that.
It takes time for that. But the point is, this isn't an instantaneous combustible reaction.
Correct.
It's an overtime exposure that eventually will erode the product or whatever the case may be.
Absolutely. And we've got product that's like sitting on some of our lab shelves. Like, hey, it's open. Like, let's test it on a regular basis. What is the oxygen content? How much of it has actually degraded due to oxygen over time?
Amazing.
So we're doing those studies.
Okay. That's perfect. So safety from that perspective, we've got it all going on. So now let's talk about, what does it do? What does C60 do? We know that in rats that are bred to grow tumors, they don't grow tumors and they live a super long time.
Yep.
But what is it that C60 does? You know, like, for example, one of the things you hear about is it's this powerful antioxidant.
Yep.
So antioxidants are fantastic, but I also know that I don't want to take too many antioxidants because oxidative damage is a normal process in the human body that is a hormetic, if you will, stressor that we need for different processes. So we don't just want to be pounding antioxidants all the time. So let's talk about that.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about benefits. Before I do that, I'm going to share our disclaimer. The FDA has not evaluated our product. It is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease. And really, the research that we have associated with us, the peer-reviewed published research, is associated with a Wistar rat study where those rats live 90%.
Right.
I'll also share this. Anything that I share with you in terms of testimonials from our customers is not like a customer told me, some other customer told them this. I always have a direct kind of chain of custody of the testimonial directly to that customer. I can find them again. And if, you know, if we were in a situation where it necessitated it, I could put somebody in contact with them.
Great.
That's the only thing that's important. And then, of course, my own testimonials. And then, of course, we're all N of one. So what I'm sharing with you might not actually apply to you. I just want to, like, I'm a scientist. Like, those are the facts. And then we can talk in. Well, let's first start with our most consistent testimonial is our customers take the product in the morning. They report mental focus and energy during the day and then better sleep that night.
Okay.
And we know how important sleep, like, we kind of, it's almost intuitively know how important sleep is. And then we do a very bad disservice to, I kind of joke, we all know how incredibly important sleep is and how we absolutely have to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep opportunity every single night, unless there's something else to do. And then we'll do that. We're the only species on the planet that will forego sleep for a non-healthful reason, right?
Yes.
Dancing's healthy, but you could do it during the day.
Absolutely.
Right. Hanging out with friends is actually good, healthy, but you can do it during the day. And so a lot of the testimonials, I'll start jumping into those, I kind of attribute to sleep. If you are legitimately getting better sleep, then that's going to help your mental, physical, and emotional well-being. That's going to help everything. And it sleep's so important. So in my case, I played soccer for 25 years. I had a knee pain coming off of soccer, and it was just an ache. Like, it wasn't anything that, you know, didn't even cause a limp. When I started taking the product in 2018 on a regular basis, that knee pain went away. I am the geeky scientist who has a spreadsheet of his migraines. The spreadsheet goes back to 2014. I was trying to figure out, like, what was causing them. Was it, like, you know, too much drinking the night before? Was it, you know, eating the wrong stuff? Was it, you know, fights with loved ones, whatever? I was trying to map this out. So I would get 4 to 5 migraines a year back to starting in 2014. In 2018, when I started taking the product on a regular basis, I didn't get a single migraine. Add that to my wife's testimonial. And I always remember the number 9 because she had it for migraines, because she had a medication that they would only give her 9. And any migraine over 9, she just had to suffer through. And she would suffer through 2 or 3 additional beyond 9 migraines in a month. Since she's got on the product, it took me a while to convince her to take it. Since she's been on the product, she's down to one every other month or one a month. So a significant impact. We do know that the molecule, the ESS60 molecule, can cross the blood-brain barrier. That can be nerve-wracking a lot of times in, in the medical community. Like if you're trying to deal with an elbow issue and you know it crosses the blood-brain barrier, you might just look for something else because you don't need it to cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm-hmm. But again, in this case, we've got the rats live longer, live 90% longer. So we've got some understanding that it's a safe molecule when you process it properly, which again, we call ESS60. You look at a testimonial that I like. One of our largest distributors here in Houston, she actually originally bought her ESS60 for her dog. She wasn't even thinking about taking it. And she saw such a massive improvement in her dog that she just then decided to start taking it. It's important to note, anytime you're talking about supplements, there's always a placebo effect that you're concerned about. Like, am I just, you know, experiencing a placebo effect? Dogs cannot experience a placebo effect. So mm-hmm. dogs are not like, I'm taking that little dropper this morning, so I'm going to be peppier this morning. And then they didn't give it to me the next morning, so I'm not going to be as peppy. So Gwen, she noticed the difference in her dog and she started taking it. And she's an interesting case because a lot of times people ask, like, how fast will I notice results? Yeah. And ironically, my biggest distributor is probably the longest and maybe even worst testimonial. So let me share it with you. So she said 3 months in, she would have said that really she hadn't noticed anything. But then she stopped, slowed down, and took stock of her life. And she's like, well, I'm actually waking up earlier. I've never been a morning person. I can actually work later into the evening. You know, I can get that extra hour of work if I want to. And this is what I arguably call the worst testimonial for a supplement ever. She cleaned her garage. Which is not on any of our literature and probably never will be.
That'll get your garage clean.
But it has big implications, right? That project that's around your house that you haven't gotten around to, maybe because you're tired, maybe because you're not motivated, maybe because of whatever, like better sleep, physical, mental, emotional well-being. Do I deserve that cleaner closet? And do I have the energy, garage, or do I have the energy for that cleaner garage? Well, she found it, right? And so those are some of the testimonials that we get. Again, the most consistent though is people take it in the morning, they report mental focus and energy during the day and better sleep that night. And you'll appreciate this. Well, let me ask you this. How many things are you aware of that you could do in the morning or take in the morning and impact your sleep that night?
Not many. I mean, not huge numbers, not straight line necessarily.
Exercise. Yeah. Like if you exercise in the morning, that'll help. Exposure to sunlight in the morning, right? Like that'll help get your circadian rhythm line with the rising and setting of the sun. I'm not aware of any others. And right. And so I can.
Well, DSIP does for some people, but that's a peptide. So, and it only works for about half the people, but you know, I mean, look, in supplement land, there might be a couple, but truthfully, to your point, consistently from person to person, it's very hard to find that thing that gives you that full circle. So have you done any studies to see, does it affect circadian?
No, boom. I'm showing you my Oura ring. Yeah, and you have one as well. So yeah. I'm actually working with a guy named Benjamin. He's an associate professor out of University of California, San Diego, who is a consultant for Oura ring. Okay. And we started in 2019, kind of going down the path of, let's take somebody who has an Oura ring and is interested in taking my product. We'll collect 10 days of survey data off the product before they start. Well, and we'll get permission over to Benjamin that he can access the data behind the scenes, because there's a lot of data. I don't know if you've logged into your web interface. Like the app is really nice and tells you what you can do the day. But if you log into the web interface, you got a ton of data back there.
Yeah.
And I think he has even more. So the way it worked is, let's take survey of our clients, people who haven't taken our product yet, 10 days off the product for the baseline, 10 days on it, 10 days back off it, and 10 days back on it.
Right.
And then with that survey data, he can go back in and say, hey, like, can I confirm the survey data with actual data, with like actual recorded data from the ring? It turns out 2020 happened And this ring is actually reasonably good at identifying COVID. So our contact Benjamin has been swamped, overwhelmed, you know, busy, like not available because he's getting press calls and working on COVID data. And that's great. Like I'm happy for him to be working on this and really hopefully gain some good notoriety. And so does Oura Ring, because it's a pretty phenomenal product. But we still have had, at this point, we've had five people go through it with survey data, and the data looks good, right? So you're looking at the baseline, and then you're looking at on the product, off the product, on the product, and both on the product, the averages for the 10 days that they were on the product versus off the product are always better so far than the baseline.
And so where are you seeing the benefits in terms of deep sleep, REM sleep, or HRV? Time spent sleeping, like what are the typical, do you know what the typical changes to sleep are that you're seeing?
So do you, if you want, I could share a screen and we could actually look at this and we can describe it well enough for your audience to hear.
I can also take a screenshot and then we can always put it in the show notes.
Let's see. I think I need to be,
I can give me access.
But we'll look at it, and it's pretty simple. I really kind of took this and ran with it since Ben wasn't available.
Well, I've got a group full of people with Oura Ring, so if you wanted to talk about something online, we could probably get a few people to play.
Yes,
if you're interested.
And we probably need to get a little bit more granular with this, because I was really like, okay, Ben's gone. Let me throw together a study. I'm not a human trial study maker. And so I'm just trying to. So basically the first row of columns is they rate their sleep. Hey, how was your sleep? The next one is how easy did you fall asleep? The next row set of columns is how restless were you? And then how did you feel the next day, right? And so you can, obviously there's going to be parallels between rate, sleep, and felt, but you see consistently that in the blue, which is the baseline, the red, which is the first 10 days on, and the green, which is the second 10 days on, that it's better. It's an interesting artifact that the 10 days off of the product in between is consistently higher. So that's an interesting effect. We actually have one person who's going through the study now. They're doing 20 days off, 20 days on and 20 days off to see if we can see some sort of pattern of if coming off of this has some benefit, right? And maybe there's some sort of, I will say dosing, right? It's not a medicine, but I'll say dosing schedule that that maybe you don't need to take it every day because these people on those 10 days are taking it every single day. And then it's consistent.
Or maybe cycle off of it for a week or two.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it for 2 or 3 weeks, come off it for a week or two, come back on, like kind of. But so what you're looking at, what you're looking at there, a lot of it is subjective.
Yeah.
And
I would say that it's all subjective. Right?
Yeah. So with Oura, did you look at all at the metric?
The data behind it?
Well, the metric, like their heart rate variability, like did that impact or?
I don't have access to Benjamin. So if I'll be honest, even getting this data is not easy from people. So I think some of these actually don't even have an Oura Ring. Like I was just like, hey, we need to be collecting this data.
Right.
I want to be the atypical supplement company that actually spends time, invests effort and dollars in studies that support like our client. Again, the rats didn't indicate that they slept better in that original study, right? That's what our customers are telling us. So let me go out and like provide some proof for it. And at this point, I'm kind of a little bit in the blind. I think it'd be good. And maybe you and I could put this together. It's like, hey, let's look at, can you share your heart rate variability? Can you share some of the individual data from that day, and then we'll have actually more things to look at. But I think this would be enough if we've got the data for them, for Benjamin to go in behind the scenes and say, hey, it does look like they're getting better deep sleep. In fact, that how much deep sleep did you get the night before would be like, let's keep that data. So I need to expand this. But I think of the five people we've gotten through this, probably three of them don't even have an Oura Ring. Like I said, I just like, hey, let's
just all just subjectively reported. Okay, cool. So, okay, great. So it makes sleep better. Anything that makes sleep better is going to make people healthier in some way, shape or form, regardless.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about, do you, before I ask some of the more specific questions, do you have a sense of how it's working, how it might be helping? Like, do we have, if it crosses the blood-brain barrier, is it affecting the pineal gland? Is it, like, do we have any idea of what it might be doing? And if it's affecting pain, any thought?
How's it doing that? Yeah. So first and foremost, I'll share that that smarter people than me will ultimately figure this out. And there are theories out there, right? The longevity, the fact that the rats live longer, and, you know, a lot of kind of the medical community says that aging is an oxidation and an inflammation process, right? So it's not surprising that the product is a really good antioxidant. Some studies said 172 times more powerful than vitamin C. And I'm not saying like vitamin C is the end all. There's actually products out there that, like, Moringa has 1,000 times more antioxidant capability than vitamin C. But how your body uses it is what's really important, right?
Right.
You have to be very careful with the FDA as it relates to saying something is an anti-inflammatory. For some reason, the FDA has decided that when you're speaking about inflammation, you're factually speaking about disease. Which we know to not be true. Anyone who's worked out really hard and felt the pain of inflammation the next day, that is not disease related. So you have to be really careful. Certainly with immunity, and maybe that's the right word, I can say that olive oil is a great antioxidant. Yeah. I mean, anti-inflammatory, right? Yeah. And so you've got the anti-inflammatory properties. It fits well in the anti-inflammatory diet. Those diets are associated with people with reduced incidences of stroke, reduced incidences of heart attacks, and actually longer lives. That kind of the blue zone people and their anti-inflammatory diets. So that's one component, right? And it makes sense that you check those two boxes on something that has longevity. We also know that it does get in the mitochondria and participate or and is available to participate in some way with the ATP processes inside the mitochondria.
Oh, it's good.
Or maybe your whole audience knows, but for those who don't, the mitochondria is one component of every cell in your body that is the powerhouse of your cell. So it's the thing that takes the sugars and converts it so that your body can actually use it. And there's a process, that process called ATP. I often kind of give an example. If you've got a room full of mitochondrial physician experts and you ask them, hey, would it be good to have a free radical sponge in the mitochondria while it's going through the ATP process, would that be beneficial? They would all say yes. And right. So we know that this ESS60 molecule, which is an antioxidant, a free radical sponge, is in there. And so maybe that's what's going on. I've also had conversations with my director of research where maybe the presence of the ESS60 molecule is actually creating more of an antagonistic, right? So being a free radical sponge, protagonistic, antagonistic, like, hey, let's put a little bit of stressor on the body. Maybe it's putting a little bit of stressor on your body and like, okay, let's finally get rid of these senescent cells, get rid of the zombie cells. Let's clean house. And maybe that perturbation is what's causing kind of these great testimonials and better sleep.
And rats to live 90% longer.
Yes.
Which it's always going to go back to that, right? So are those studies basically happening? Like, are people trying to quantify how it, like, even at a rat level, like, what is it that made these rats live longer? And was, you know, has anybody done another study to replicate that study?
Or, well, so that's a great question. And that actually just goes to the fundamental process of science, right? Mm-hmm. So the process of science is a hypothesis. By the way, most hypotheses come from anecdotal observations. So I think it's correct to be fairly dismissive of anecdotal observations, but understand that they're a paramount part of the scientific process. Yeah. Without my customers telling me they're sleeping better, I don't do a sleep study, right? Yeah. So that's very important. In this particular case, the hypothesis was it's toxic.
Right.
The result was it's the opposite of toxic. They live 90% longer. And literally in the scientific process, the next step is for another institution to recreate the same result. That was published in 2012. No one's done that yet. So actually in 2019, we were having conversations with an organization that can do these types of rat studies. And we're currently kind of jumping through the hoops necessary to get one of those rat studies going. And I think in March, we're going to have like the first test. So they require us to do like 14-day toxicity tests. I think it's like first is like 7-day and then 90-day. And then we'll be able to go into a full study. Wow. But that's going to be, you know, that's 5+ years. Of note, in that original study, they didn't give rats. So some people like, hey, is it too late for me? Should I bother taking it? I'm kind of not a young rat anymore. in that study, they didn't give the rats any dosing until month 10. So typical Worcester rat lives 32 months. So a third of their life was pretty much over when they started dosing. And then they only dosed them until month 17. So even though their last dose month was month 17, all the water control rats died at month 32. The MyVitalC rats lived out to 62. So you can imagine when we do the study, we will not stop dosing the rats.
So wait, so the rats that lived 90% longer only got C60 until they were 17 months old and then they stopped. So that's so interesting, because that speaks a little bit, like in a microscopic way, to that sleep data you just showed me, where on the week, what was it? It was 10 days on, 10 days off, 10 days on, 10 days off.
Yep.
In the 10 days off, they actually held on to a lot of they actually were better.
Yeah.
Then the next 10 days on.
Yeah. So that's another thing that we're going to have to figure out, because you could argue, well, maybe they should have only been dosed for 1 month, right? That's a legitimate scientific hypothesis. Or maybe they would have lived longer if they had been dosed for the entire duration of their life.
Right.
We'll be looking at those studies, and we're the first company to step up. And actually, it kind of reminded me, I wanted to get to this. So C60 is out there. People are selling it in olive oil, yes. MCT oil, avocado oil. We share the three oils, and I'll talk to you about that in a second. But our pedigree is just different than any C60 company that's out there, right? From 1991, really until 2017, when I sold a product, I was selling it to a research institution. Mm-hmm. And when they got our C60, they gave it either to their research associate or their grad student, who took it back to their HPLC. And then they confirmed that I sold them what I said that I sold them. So I wasn't operating in a realm where, if I told you I was selling an olive oil, and in fact, there was one company whose focus was MCT oil, and their labeling started off as 0.8 milligrams per milliliter in MCT oil. Well, it turns out you can only get about 0.35 milligrams per milliliter in MCT oil factually, right?
Right.
So what you know about that company, at least in the early days, I like to try and give people credit, or I'm very altruistic in this point, that hopefully they fixed that. And they actually did change their labels. And hopefully it's because they're testing and not because they're listening to my podcast. so they were selling an MCT product to consumers that said 0.8 milligrams per milliliter. Those consumers don't have an HPLC. So they're not testing these products. And that's really the reason I hesitated. Think about that study came out in 2012. The data was pretty clear. Again, C60 industrial applications, harmful if improperly processed, ESS60 safe. We could have just jumped on board and said, hey, here's the biggest opportunity of our lives. We should just start selling this like hotcakes as quickly as possible. But I remember coming into 2018, actually reading an article about the supplement industry and how this was peer-reviewed published research. 50% of supplements on the market don't have in them what they say they have in them.
Yeah.
And I like to, like, so that you can take that to an extreme and say that's unbelievably and unconscionable. But in that study, if you sold a gram of, a gram tablet of ascorbic acid, right, vitamin C, and it only had 0.95 instead of 1 gram, then that's literally not selling what you say. So it's not like there was none of the product in it. That's not right. What that study's saying.
It's just exactly saying, what it said.
Right. They're just not meeting, which still goes to kind of like consumer integrity, scientific integrity, and all of those things. Your labeling really should match, like your product should really match what your labeling says.
Yeah.
And so we really hesitated coming into any sort of industry that was supplement related. And Then when we got in it, people are coming in, they're buying C60 from us, they're selling products because we're the largest manufacturer of ESS 60 on the planet. They're buying from us and they're putting it in their products. And we started testing them. We tested like 22 of the products that are available. And it actually was worse than the 50%. Like none of them have what they say they have in them. Right. And then some of them are just woefully low in concentrations. And so like, it's a little frustrating, to have confirmation of what our concern was coming into this industry.
And so is that what basically got you making your own product?
So we've been manufacturing ours since 1991. So the raw ingredients since 1991.
No, I know that, but I mean the supplement part of it.
Well, the supplement, remember in 2013, we started mixing it in the oil so that you could recreate the rat experiment.
Right. Right. Okay. Sorry. And then, I lost track of that timeline.
What I can say is that it's really that awareness of a lack of integrity in the industry. And that's in general, but specifically in the C60 industry. Man, I really don't like talking that. Like this is not my... My belief is that like speaking negatively of an industry doesn't really help anybody, like, and probably even hurts me. But I can tell you, I did one video early on, it's probably 2 years ago now, where I just proved that this one particular product had no C60 in it, right? So you get the product, it's in sunflower seed oil, it's dark, and then you just filter it and clear sunflower seed oil comes out. And I already shared with you, if you put C60 in MCT, it turns purple. Also, in the video that I did that I published, if you put pure C60 in sunflower oil, it also turns purple because sunflower oil is pretty clear. His has no C60 in it. And when you talk about doing negative marketing, I was comfortable releasing that video because he's not in my industry. He's actually pretending to be in my industry and he doesn't have it in his product. So it's unfortunate, but really what we decided is like, how is it that we could keep consumers safe? Mm-hmm. ESS 60, it's a trademark term. It's, you know, C60 that's been processed for safer human consumption. If you want to be safe in this environment, and you should want to be safe in this environment, then ESS 60 can do it. I also like we're kind of on this topic. I'd like to talk a little bit, and you probably have some strong feelings about this, about Amazon as a source for supplementation.
Never.
So we are on Amazon, right? So it's convenient for our customers, but I like to ask people, what does a 5-star rating about vitamin C even mean?
Well, and who posted it? Like, I'm so skeptical of buying stuff on Amazon. It's so easy. And Amazon has admitted, like, they don't have the bandwidth to stop all the counterfeiters from jumping in.
Nope. And,
you know, sometimes there's a spelling mistake, there's a little clue, you know, but I mean, I remember once buying, and I mean, it wasn't even something I was putting in my body. It was like, I think they were exercise tapes or something. And it ended up that they were bootlegs you know, and the quality was poor and you could tell that somebody had photocopied a label and slapped it on a case. Like, it was hilarious, but I'm very careful personally about buying supplements.
Yeah. And again, go back to that vitamin C example, right? Cause a 5-star rating that somebody puts on vitamin C, let's just say it's the real consumer. What we know that 5-star doesn't mean is doesn't mean that they even weighed the pill.
No.
Doesn't mean that they took it into an HPLC and said, oh, it's all ascorbic acid. Like, we know that none of that is happening. Like, if you're lucky, it really means it showed up and maybe they counted the tabs, but it probably doesn't.
And they took it and it didn't make them sick.
Yeah.
Or worse, right?
They didn't vomit immediately after taking the vitamin C, right? Which could be so many things. Like, so yeah, be careful in on Amazon because it's, you know, the 5-star rating, especially in the, I'll use it for electronics all day long, right?
Yeah.
And I had your experiment, you know, experience with like a pirated CD or tape or whatever. But it's a great way to like, oh, is this a good pump or is this a good, you know, inflatable mattress, but not supplementation.
No, I buy all kinds of stuff from Amazon, but not supplements. Okay, let's go back to that question about antioxidant, though, because remember, we were talking a little bit about how it's a very powerful antioxidant. we know that we don't want too powerful an antioxidant on board all the time because it's a hormetic stress. You were referring to a hormetic stressor earlier.
Yep.
So it's a stressor that, you know, it's that whole what doesn't kill you makes you stronger kind of thing. We need some of that stress on the body so that the body gets stronger. So do we know anything about the antioxidant capacity or ability of C60? Or maybe is that maybe what the pulsing would be all about, taking it for a period of time, then not taking it, you know, so that you're not always overloading the body with this powerful antioxidant property?
I mean, that's a good observation. And I hadn't actually put that together about the sleep. In reality, we don't know. We just don't know yet. And again, is it that hormetic stressor? Like, we don't know if it's that or both, right?
Yeah.
How interesting would it be if it's both? And we were talking earlier where I don't know which peptide, but you were saying like there's some peptides that like upregulate DNA in all the ways that you want it to and downregulate DNA in all the ways that you want it to. It reminded me of a study that's related to cancer cells. So if you take in a petri dish cancer cells and healthy cells, right? And you introduce an anti-cancer agent, which is always a poison, right? You're hoping to poison the cancer before your healthy cells.
Yeah.
In the presence of ESS60, that anti-cancer agent has more efficacy against the cancer cells, and there's a protective effect for the healthy cells.
That's so interesting.
Right. So it really has that parallel. Like that's what it made me think of that particular study.
Duality.
The duality. Like what? Like, and again, this goes to like, well, what is it really doing? Like, and maybe it is actually multifaceted. Right. It has the ability to hold a lot of electrons and release a lot of electrons without the degradation. Right. Our cell phones, lithium batteries. You know, day one, it's phenomenal. I can go 2 days, day and a half. And then, you know, a year and a half later, it's like, I got to always be charging in order to keep my phone going. That's because of the degradation of the battery material. The adding electrons and releasing electrons actually cause physical degradation of the material.
Right.
There will probably be bucky batteries at some point because of their ability to hold these electrons and release them. And so maybe it's able to hold them. It's able to do some things that if we could make benzene ring on its own, just safe, right, without having any of the toxic effects. Maybe there's some things that it can do that we would like benzene to do, but we can't put benzene in the body because it's actually toxic. And we know that benzene is reactive in some good ways. One of the theories, I just thought of this one. In the early days, right, the size of the buckyball is such that you can get any atom on the periodic chart inside of it, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the early theories is, well, what if we trapped some radioactive atoms inside of the buckyball? And then the chemistry on benzene works pretty well on the buckyball. So we could actually attach some things on the exterior to make it, I don't know, attached to a cancer cell.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're dropping a radioactive load right on a cancer cell, right? So it's going to do a little damage with whatever else is around it. But if you can just selectively get all of this radiation onto cancer cells, then, you know, your collateral damage is very little and your actual, you know, your hitting your target is right on.
So your buckyball is a Troy horse of, what's that term?
It's a Trojan horse. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
So some of the, I'm just going to ask you a couple of fast questions here because I want us to talk before we go. The peptide you were referring to is the copper peptide, GHKCU, which is actually a peptide we talked about before the show, which we're going to talk about because there's a very exciting new product you're developing.
Yes.
So some of the things I've read, and again, this has got, I'm sure this all goes back to that original rat study, but it was referring to possibility of being hepatoprotective, so protective of the liver. Have you seen that? The liver protective and then DNA, and it could it possibly be playing a role in DNA repair? Because of course, one of the other big mechanisms of aging is that as our DNA is replicating over time, you get mistakes in the strand. And as we age, we have more and more damaged DNA kind of thing. So Do you want to speak to that at all, or is that still
absolutely? And actually, what I'll speak with regard to the DNA is maybe the opposite of what you're thinking.
Okay.
But let's start with the liver. So yeah, in that original study, when I first presented it to my director of research, he was like, "This could easily have been five separate papers."
Yeah.
And they're all phenomenal. So mm-hmm. in one aspect of the study, so not the rats that lived 32 months and then 62 months, but another set of rats, they actually gave carbon tetrachloride to, which is
right.
a known like oxidative stressor.
Yeah.
And they noted the shape of the livers of these rats, the rats that were in the control group, the water group, the litters, their livers never recuperated. And the ones that were given ESS-60 and olive oil, their livers recuperated, right? So, okay. So yes, it's got, and that's specifically related in the antioxidant realm.
Okay.
So yeah, great. good for your liver implication of that particular piece of the study.
Perfect.
And then if you talk about DNA, there is a competitor that's out there in the C60 space, not the ESS-60 space, who is saying that C60 will extend your telomeres. And they used to buy from us, and I've still got a decent relationship with him, but I sent him a note. I was like, "Hey, that's really exciting. Like, send me the literature." It's like, everybody knows this. It's like, okay, I'm glad that everyone knows this. Where's the reference? And it was probably the third time when it came back, he was like, "Yeah, there's no reference." And
just made it up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the short answer to that is yes. I think it's absolutely in the realm of possibility. I think realm is the right word, right? It's
yeah.
not abjectly impossible. but it's just, there's no scientific rigor behind being out there saying that it extends your telomeres. Like that's yeah. just, that's not, you know, have a study, show the study, or even have at least your own in petri dish result that shows it, but don't just start saying this as a fact. That same group will often talk about, and this will probably get you fired up on something that we mentioned earlier. They'll say, "Oh, you should eat an apple right before you take the product because the hydrogen in the apple improves performance." Again, there's no research on this, right? Like there's none. So might eating an apple while you're taking your olive oil with ESS-60 be good and even better than taking them separately or at separate times? It might be, but I wouldn't say that because there's no data to support it. Like there's no research that supports that.
Yeah.
So again, like if you listen and dig into the environment, and that's the thing, like we're humans. We don't like we're modern humans. We're not just humans. We're modern humans. Most of us don't have time to like dig into all this data and go like,
yeah.
"Hey, the things this guy is saying don't really seem real. Maybe I should buy from somebody else."
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, that's disappointing, but I mean, look, at the end of the day, I guess what it is that first study, people would say, well, for rats to live 90% longer, their DNA must have been protected in some way, because especially if you have get rats that live that much longer and don't develop tumors, and therefore it's not a stretch to put out a hypothesis for some other study that says, is it possible that one of the mechanisms of action might have been DNA protection or repair or whatever the case may be, and then to investigate that as part of
yes.
the study.
and what I will add, and this isn't specifically to like the telomere length, but there are tests out there, DNA age tests.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know much about these,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
DNA age is one. True age is by True Diagnostics. Is
those
another.
Are DNA methylation tests, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'll really... My understanding of these tests is it's just really an aggregation process, mm-hmm. meaning if we get a lot of data about 50-year-olds and their telomeres on average are this long, and then we take your data, we're just comparing it to the rest. It's not like, hey, your data has shortened by this much and everyone who's 50 years old has this methylation level.
No,
And
they're not all even looking at telomeres.
Yeah.
Right. So there's yep. the guys that are looking at telomeres. And frankly, from what I've seen, you know, the science on telomeres isn't exactly crystal clear just yet.
I would agree. Yeah.
Not super, you know, there's a peptide called apitalon, which is an anti-aging peptide, which is which acts on the pineal gland. It upregulates melatonin production. And these are human studies that were done on people like in their 70s and 80s.
Right.
And it upregulated their melatonin production. So they slept better. Their immune function got better. Their blood sugar regulation got better. Their bone density got better. And why would that be? Well, maybe if you make more melatonin, you sleep better, you produce more growth hormone. All of the, it's like that. It's a little bit what you're talking about.
Yep.
If we improve sleep, there's so many other things that just fall into place. But one of the other pieces of that study was that it made their telomeres longer. And that's been disputed because that research study happened a long time ago. And so people aren't fully confident that the methodology used at that time to measure telomeres was necessarily accurate. Right.
Accurate, yeah.
And even now people are saying, well, we don't, I mean, obviously super short telomeres is not a good thing, but we're not super clear on lengthening telomeres being the be all end all. Right.
Yeah.
So I think anyway, but to your point, the DNA aging test, the methylate, the tests that are looking at the aging pattern on your DNA, I've actually done two podcasts with two different companies, and you'll laugh at this because one of the podcasts is an interview with a guy he's a scientist, he's a researcher, he's a doctor, he's a big wheel. And for him, the test that they provide, it's a sidebar to his research is really about solving cancer.
Right.
And so somebody in his organization said, hey, you know, I've got this really cool thing I've developed. It's kind of like the Horvath clock, only it's way simpler, cheaper to administer, but the results line up right up alongside it. And he's like, yeah, sure, market the test, go out there. But when they come back to you with your results, they report back on your speed of aging and they compare you to people who show the methylation pattern that you have are typically this age.
Yep.
Versus you. So they're being very cautious. They're not exactly telling you, oh, you've reversed your age. It's like, this is about your speed of aging.
Right.
And, you know, you're kind of showing up like a person of this age. The other company, completely different. I mean, also very respectable, good science behind it, the whole nine yards. But the spin is, the language and the spin is quite different. And so,
right.
But I think that what the invitation and what the opportunity with something like Carbon 60 is, as a biohacker, I would do a run of it, let's say 3 months. I might do one of these tests before, and then I might do my test again in 6 months. The problem with people like me and you and so many of the other people out there is we're doing 1,000 things.
Yeah. It's a lot of things.
I'm using.
What is the protocol? At the end of the 3 months, how do we define the protocol?
And what was it that, was it the Apitalon run that you did? Was it the GHKCU? Was it the C60? Was it, so the good news, if my metrics have all gotten better, nothing in my protocol made me older.
Right, yeah, yeah. Or maybe one was making you older and something else was actually, so we're actually doing one of those studies, right?
In the latter
part of 2019, a doctor out of Tampa, Florida called me and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And I didn't really give that much attention to it until he called in 2020 and he was like, hey, and it was just two subjects and he was driving it from it internally and they did the David Sinclair protocol. Well,
nice.
Parts of it, right?
Yeah.
So they did NMN and they did resveratrol. They didn't do the metformin and they did those two and ESS60.
Nice.
Right. So, and this is when I kind of learned about these studies cause I didn't like, they weren't on my radar. He said they took the test and then 6 months later, they took the test again after doing that protocol every day. And when I started doing research on this, I came to understand like the goal typically in this situation is in 6 months, you only age 5 months, right?
Exactly.
Like, so you're slowing the aging process down.
Yeah.
Well, one of the ladies reverted 1.6 years and the other one 2.8 years.
Get out.
Go over the course of this. So he was really excited. He's like, we need to do, he said, I want to change the test from DNA age to true diagnostics, true, because he had a conversation with him. And he was like, let's do a 20 and we need to like get it approved by the FDA and all this. I'm like, look, we're a small company. Let's make it for people, right? It's a new test. Let's move forward to make sure that this makes sense. And so really, actually, I need to send him a note. We should have the data, the results. I think they've already taken the blood test the second time and they're waiting for the result from that second time.
So
again, we're out there supporting those types of things. And I don't know, you know, what does it really mean? Like, if it comes out really good, obviously it's great for marketing, but from a scientific perspective, what they're not doing, it's not like carbon, is it carbon 13 dating? It's not like carbon 13 dating, like, because there's only this much carbon 13 in this sample, we know its age. It's kind of like when your children are growing up, they say they're in the 90th percentile, but there is no like your child is this old, so they should be this tall, right? And then anything else is, you know, I guess they do say it's abnormal just because on average children are supposed to be that tall on average, but it's not a clock, right? It's this kind of thing that spins almost not randomly, but that's associated with age. And when people who are 50, they tend to be here. And if you're higher or lower, then we'll call you here or here, but it doesn't have the significance that you wish it had is kind of the impression that I've gotten.
Yeah. I mean, it's not fully defined and but the other thing is, you know, four people is four people.
Yeah.
And you don't know what else they're doing necessarily. Having said that, it's still interesting, right? It's still, you know, could it be the kind of information that inspires a scientist one day to say, oh, okay, we're doing it. You know what? The problem is getting the funding for that stuff.
Yes.
Never simple.
Yeah. And
you know that better than anybody.
I would think that getting it for that specific test would be even harder, right?
Because you're not solving a disease, right? Yeah. I mean, we can define aging as a disease, but it's not something that's really high on the list of.
And it's not a scientific, like the length of this means this.
No.
Right. Like it's not that. So you've read, David Sinclair's book, right? And that is really just, the book's called Lifespan. That's really just a plea for like, hey, let's call aging a disease so we can actually start putting funds at it. Because if we solve aging, then we solve all of these other things that we're spending all our money on, right? Like cardiovascular diseases, Alzheimer's, like all of these things. It's kind of funny that it took me a while to come up with the word Alzheimer's. So no irony there.
Okay. Couple more things because we are, you know, we're getting on. I mean, I can talk to you all day, but eventually people are going to want us to wrap this up. So timing of day, you're basically saying first thing in the morning seems to be the time that certainly helps people with their sleep.
Yep.
And I would say that if it's such a powerful antioxidant, maybe we take it away from exercise because that way you allow the oxidative stress of your exercise to kind of do its thing around, you know, like the appropriate oxidation. Cycling, again, it's unclear, but there's probably an argument. I mean, I love cycling things anyway. I think the body responds better. So whether people decide to say, you know what, I'm going to take it 5 days a week and then off 2 days a week, or I'm going to take it for a month and then I'm going to take a couple weeks off. And if they're measuring their sleep, then hopefully you might be able to see your metrics shift. And then you might see them shift if you wanted to wait until they shift back, whatever the case may be. Having said that, there were a couple of other things we talked about ahead of time that are really exciting in terms of things that you're looking at down the road in terms of developing new products.
That's good. I'd love to get to that. Let me talk a little bit about kind of cycling.
Okay.
So, and then like taking it in the morning. So the reason we really now recommend that you take it in the morning is, again, our customers, a very small percentage. I'm going to say it's actually really, when you think in terms of how likely are you to report a negative effect, right? Which was interruption of sleep in this case versus, you know, reporting a positive effect. Like it's like nine times higher. So I would say we're in the 1% range of people telling us, and some of it's like one-on-one, hey, it did interrupt my sleep if I took it too late in the morning, in the afternoon.
Okay.
So we probably shouldn't give it that much credibility because it's such a low percentage of people on a negative effect. Right. Mm-hmm. So that really should have been, you know, nine times, like if, you know, 20% of our people say it, then it's going to happen to a number. It's happening to more. Right.
Exactly.
And I can tell you, it doesn't work with me. I can take it anytime. But I'm not a good example because I can drink a cup of coffee and go right to sleep. I know that my sleep is not good. I know that I'm not getting proper in REM and REM sleep, but I can't actually go to sleep.
You never know.
That's true. There've been some interesting conversations about those, blood sugar real-time devices.
Oh my God, so inaccurate.
Oh, okay. So one, they're inaccurate. Like that doesn't surprise me at all. And two, and this could explain it, like people eating things that are supposed to be horrible for blood glucose level. I would imagine it's inaccurate, but I would imagine that it's relative adjustment, meaning is it spiking versus not spiking, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I used to believe that too. I mean, you know what? I think there's a lot of questions about it. And this only really just came on my radar recently.
Yeah.
Woman who is a client of mine and is in my group who was reporting back on, basically she got so freaked out about the numbers on the one CGM she was wearing that she put one on the other arm.
And right.
Then all hell broke loose because one arm had nothing to do with the other arm. So she called the company and they basically said, oh yeah, well, maybe you got a bad one, but we don't know which one is bad. And so then they offered to send her new ones. But now what's happened is that they've actually come out with a second and third generation because of trying to address inaccuracies in the first generation, which is what everybody's using right now.
Wow.
So this isn't the Dexcom 60, obviously. This is the Abbott Labs, the Libre, the Freestyle Libre. Mm-hmm. So the Freestyle Libre one is, from what I can see, it seems to be all over the map and not, and to your point, I said the same thing. I said, look, if at least it gives you a relative, like my blood sugar is higher, my blood sugar is lower, but even that started to get a little wonky. So
wow,
it's possible she's like an anomaly, or the fact that they come out with second and third generation tells us there's something up because no company is developing more stuff of the same stuff if they don't have to. So
yeah.
I would say that the way to, for the CGMs, the best way to use them is probably, frankly, it takes you back to the reason why you got one in the first place, is you're back to poking holes in your fingers and checking it periodically to confirm that it's at least somewhere in the realm.
That sounds like the history of my scientific career where people are like, hey, this is this. And I'm like, eh, let me check. Well, you know, it's not. It's actually not that. And you find that a whole lot, like all, frankly, all the time, just all the time. It's disappointing. And kind of final thing on cycling, before I had taking my Vital C as part of my routine, right? Yeah. So now it's actually part of my coffee routine. In reality, actually put some MCT in my coffee. So I have a bulletproof coffee experience. So imagine like brain octane, but you're adding the ESS60 molecule to it.
You're adding the ESS60 molecule with your, oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do that while I'm kind of mixing that, while that's blending, I'm actually taking a teaspoon and a half of the olive oil product. And then for lunch, I often have salads. When I do, I put on our avocado product. Just to tell you difference, olive oil is the only one with research, right? It's reasonable to expect that there's benefits of the others, but olive oil is the only one with research. It also happens to have the highest concentration of ESS60.
Right.
So you can get 0.8 milligrams per milliliter. An avocado, about 0.6, 0.65, and then an MCT, 0.3, 0.35. And so like there's a variability. We actually have a policy. If somebody orders a full case of MCT, we'll call them and say, hey, like, it's a great product. Like, we stand behind it. But you know, just know in case you didn't, that there's a higher concentration of ESS60 in olive oil.
Okay. So I'm going to hate myself for doing this, 'cause I'm going to ask you yet another question. We're going to keep going here. Why would someone use olive oil versus MCT versus avocado? Why wouldn't it just make sense to just use the extra virgin olive oil?
That's what makes sense to me. And that's like what I tend to recommend our customers take. And our customers, like, sometimes they speak, and even if it's not like the thing with scientific rigor, you need to answer, because otherwise they'll go elsewhere. So yeah, our customers are interested in an MCT product. They are interested in an avocado. That is the reason. But if, you know, your new audience is interested in trying it, I would do the olive oil.
Okay, because you'll get the most, you'll get the best concentration.
Some people actually don't like olive oil that much. So we're talking about taking one teaspoon of olive oil with the ESS60 molecule in it. Some people don't like it. If you don't like it, sop it up with a little bread like you're at an Italian restaurant and eat it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, if you eat bread or whatever, throw it on your salad, frankly.
Yeah.
Okay. So Let's talk very quickly about these new exciting products you've got coming down the pipes, one of which you're going to let me try once you're ready to guinea pig it to someone. But
yes,
because this is now, guys, moving into the realm of peptides. Unbeknownst to me, Chris has his eye on our favorite copper peptide, GHKCU, and he's been playing with stacking the C60 and the GHKCU and seeing some really interesting results. And so thinking that maybe this might be a good thing to bring to market.
Absolutely. And it's really, again, driven by our customers.
Yeah.
And our customers who just take it orally, right? So we're not even talking about putting anything topically. Our customers who take our olive oil or any one of our oil products orally, they report kind of improvements in skin, improvements in skin blemishes, and hair growth and hair returning original color kind of things. Again, FDA not evaluated. You could have different results. I want to be very clear about that. And so we're like, okay, well, that's interesting. And then my director of research was doing some research on copper peptides. And we're like, well, those have some pretty well-documented positive benefits for skin and hair. Mm-hmm. Let's kind of put these together. Additionally, our customers who, our product is not inexpensive. And when you're pouring it into a spoon, there may be a drop. And you don't want the drop to be wasted. So you might pick that drop up and put it on your face or your hands. And we actually will be working on a face serum that's kind of independent of the copper peptide. So we're like, hey, let's put this together. I'm like, well, you know, let's try something. And what I shared with you kind of before is I was in my business partner's office and I have a lot of kind of liver spots. I was a kid who lived in the sun my whole life. You were a lifeguard. You were probably watching me as I'm swimming all the time, right? And so I've got liver spots on the back of my hand. And I was just at my business partner's desk. And he's like, you have old hands. Your hands look old because these dark liver spots. And then I've got another spot that's more kind of a mole or something different that's darker. And they were basically that color. I'll hold it up to the screen for anybody who is watching. So it's kind of a dark color. Yeah. And then you can see light grays. You might not be able through the camera, but there's light gray kind of liver spots around here. But they were this darker, darker color.
So they just faded. I see.
And so... And I didn't plan this, and I actually didn't expect this result. Otherwise, I would have taken pre-pictures and then had post-pictures. We've actually since, I'm continuing to do the treatment. But the treatment is really microneedling, some shallow microneedling. And then I'll take our copper peptide, put ESS60 in MCT oil, actually. Mix those two together in your hand because one of them's oil-based, one of them's water-based. So you actually mix it right at that moment. And we call it that kind of activation process. And then you put it on. And literally a week later, I went back to him and was like, what do you think of my old hands now? And like everybody around the office is like just excited about this new product that we're working on.
So that's amazing. So the copper peptide that you used, was it the pure powder or is it a serum that you bought from somewhere else?
It's actually, we started with the pure powder. And in this case, we've got a lotion and we mixed it into the lotion.
I see. Okay. Interesting. So it must've been the coolest color because the C60 in the MCT oil is purple.
Yep.
The peptide is this like cobalt blue.
Yep.
So must've just the color alone.
It is very cool. And I'm also testing that same thing for hair growth.
Wow. Okay. Well, that'll be fascinating. As we talked earlier, if you can solve for that, those two problems, life is going to get very exciting for you, my friend. Okay. Well, all right. I think we're going to have to wrap this up because we've been at it for a while. We could clearly keep talking for a while, but I think we're going to cut it off. And maybe what we'll do is, we'll talk offline. Maybe we can recruit some people because like there's so many people in my group who are already measuring their sleep, whether it's with an Oura Ring or I'm using the Oura Ring and a bio strap these days.
Right.
So we could do something fun there. It would obviously not be an official study, but unofficially, it would be kind of a fun experiment.
Good. It could be good data. I mean, that's the reality is, you know, it's just a good data point. So we didn't talk about this before, but I'll put together a link for your audience to go to.
Thank you.
It would be myvitalc.com/BSPNN. So if you go to myvitalc.com/B as in boy, S-P-N-N, right? that will get you to a nice landing page that will make a custom for you. What I recommend is you can get a bottle. A bottle's about $99. If you get on subscription, it's $74.95. There's like a 25% savings. You can cancel that at any time. Our staff isn't trained to talk you out of it. You can look at our Google reviews. Like, we're a legit organization. Also, if they'd like $15 off of their initial order, the same thing, BSPNN, as a coupon code, will get them that additional $15 off.
Amazing. That's phenomenal. Thank you so much. So BSPNN to get 15% off.
$15.
Off
the first order. Yeah.
Off the first order. And I'll put those links in the show notes anyway, so that they're available for people. Chris, this has been spectacular. Is there a way for people to find you, or are there links? Are you on Instagram? Where do people find you, follow you, learn
we
more?
We are. And I do have conversations with people. Like, they call our customer service. They're really well-trained. They can answer most of the questions. And then somebody like, hey, I'd really like to get a hold of Chris. And then that can happen and get on my schedule. And I'm happy to do that. The website, myvitalseed.com/ BSPNN. That's what I would use as a base. We are on Instagram. So Instagram.com/ MyVitalC. Facebook is also MyVitalC. And that's how you can connect. I think we do have a Twitter account. Somebody's taking care of that. So I don't know what's happening there, but that would also be MyVitalC.
Cool. Keep it consistent. Keep it real.
Yes.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. I really enjoyed our talk today.
Me too. This has been awesome. Thank you for having me, Natalie.
It was great. And I'm sure we'll reconnect at some point and report back on something amazing.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natmidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application, just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.